I'll call the meeting to order. Today we're going to get a presentation from the Department of Human Services on their new budget forecast based on the their latest data. So George Hoffman and Susan Snyder would come on up.
Mr. Chairman, George Hoffman, Department of Human Services, and at my right is Susan Snyder, who is one of our forecasting staff working on MFIP and child care and general assistance. We have provided to the committee an overview of the forecast changes, covering both the changes in November and the February forecast changes. If you look at page one of that document, it's got the names of the budget activities down the left column. It's got the names of the budget activities down the left column. It, including four activities in the medical assistance program. And then it's got, in thousands of dollars, the end of session 07 forecast, and then the forecast change in the November forecast. The positive number is an increase, the negative number is a decrease. Then the forecast change in the February forecast, and the in the last column, the February forecast as it stands. And on page two are all the corresponding percentage changes percentage change in the November forecast, percentage change in the February forecast, and the combined percentage change for the two of them, for the two together since the end of session. Now, if you look at the total general fund on the first page, you can get a reading of what the forecast change has been in November and February for the total general fund effect of all the forecast changes. So in the November forecast, we had an increase of $18 million. In the February forecast, we've had an increase of $40.9 million. So those are the, if you're wondering what our change was in the February forecast, in the current biennium, the answer is approximately $41 million. And this sheet is the current biennium, the 08-09 biennium. Page 3 has the same format and the same information on the forecast for the next biennium, FY10 and 11. So if you look at the corresponding line, total general fund February forecast, on page 3, you see that our forecast change for the next biennium is $141 million. Now, essentially, just to give you a nutshell on the February changes as such, the February forecast changes are essentially all produced by the forecast of a weaker economy. So if you look up the column of the February forecast change and look on page one for where does the $40.9 million increase come from, under MA families with with children basic, you see a $42 million increase. And that is basically where the February forecast increase comes from a forecast of additional enrollment of children and parents in the medical assistance program. There are also some additional increases in the GAMC program and in MFIP and in general assistance. So, but the net increase can be basically ascribed to the medical assistance changes families with children. And that comes from a forecast that the enrollment of children and parents in medical assistance in the current biennium is going to be 3% higher than we had anticipated in the November forecast. And in the next biennium, that it will be 5% higher than we had anticipated in the previous forecast. So that's in a few minutes, that is the short story of the February forecast changes. In the general fund.
Representative Walker had a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and you're probably going to get into it, since you said that was a short speech. I'm sure there's a long speech, because otherwise we'd be done. But I'm curious, because I haven't, although I sit on finance committee, I haven't had the opportunity to really get in my questions answered dealing with these areas that you just brought up. The changes in the forecast, what are you seeing? I mean, is it the economy itself, or was it the changes that were made that were overlooked that we did in 2007 that are causing the increase?
Mr. Hoffman.
What we do in the forecast is we try to forecast what we are going to spend in the program under the current law. So this is our forecast of what we anticipate we will spend in the programs and what enrollment and so forth in the programs is going to be if we don't make any law changes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Mr. Hoffman, let me see if I can get this, because I get that part. The difficulty that I have, that I know we'll be spending the next couple weeks, next couple months, going back and forth about, especially these particular programs and how much money we're doing for entitlements and things of that nature and all the wonderful speeches that we'll hear around that. I'm really interested in the need. I know that you guys do your base guesstimate on what we have in law, what the economy is looking like, what people are eligible to receive. I'm really interested in trying to figure out the differences if the economy was better and we still have the same things in law. Would we be seeing, would you still have a guesstimate of that amount of individuals possibly utilizing the program? And it's a tough question to get to, but, I'm one for, are these individuals, are we seeing an increase because of need, or are we seeing an increase because availability, if that makes sense?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, we don't much deal in why.
I know.
We deal in what what we see happening in the data, and then trying to construct models that we can use to forecast what that data is going to look like in the future. And so we saw the enrollment of children, and we do a month by month forecast.
Mm-hmm.
So we forecast. We look at the monthly historical data, and we forecast month by month going out how many people we're going to have enrolled in that MA segment of children and parents. And our experience in the last few months of 07 is that by December that enrollment was about 1.5% higher than we anticipated it was going to be. So we had some experience, a little higher than we had anticipated before, and we also had a new economic forecast, and we used a forecast of Minnesota unemployment as an independent variable for our forecast in a number of programs, and enrollment of MA children and parents is one of those programs. And so we now have a more pessimistic economic scenario, as well as some experience that says enrollment ran a little higher than we expected to do. And so we do a new forecast, and it gives us a forecast on average for the biennium of enrollment about 3% higher. Now, what I would say about that is that is basically the effect of a weaker economy. Our unemployment forecast is higher, and we have that experience, and we're inclined to attribute that experience also to the weaker economy. Now, what does the weaker economy do? It leaves more people without jobs, or more people in worse jobs than they might otherwise have been in, and so it leaves more people without health coverage. It also puts a certain amount of pressure on employers who may find themselves cutting the amount of health coverage that they offer. And so for all of those reasons, a weaker economy tends to put more people on our programs. Now, they will go to the trouble, well, what actually causes them to enroll may vary between somebody who comes to GAMC because they have some kind of immediate health issue that they need care for and they don't have the means to pay for, or in the case of medical assistance, it may be families who want coverage for their children, even though they may not have some immediate major health needs. But that's basically how I think it works.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Helfman, for that piece. That's really helpful. One other just technical piece, I guess, technical for you, learning curve for me, as it relates to when you're doing your estimates and dealing with the unemployment rate, knowing that, you know, our unemployment rate is still really based on those that are actively unemployed that are on the numbers. They don't necessarily include my constituents who are no longer receiving benefits that had to go get a half part-time job or even still looking. They're just not getting counted with our numbers. How do you guys take into account that group of population separate from the unemployed individuals that we are tracking for sure when you're doing these estimates?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, we use statistical methods to try to make the connection between what has been going on in the program and the economic variables that we're able to use. And that, in effect, adjusts for the fact that none of the data is perfect, but is representative of a more general trend. And so we don't have to count everybody who needs medical assistance to try to approximate how many we're going to see on the program.
Mr. Chair, I'll stop there. That's good info for me. I know he has plenty more to say about other stuff, so I'll wait. I'll be patient.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Hoffman.
What I would like to do, because this is an overview which we thought was an appropriate scope for the available time, is to go to the note on the forecast changes that starts on page 5 of this document, and we'll go through the forecast activities, and what you have there is a summary of the percentage changes in the biennial forecast since the end of session. And you can find these same percentages on page 1. If you look in the right-hand column, page 2, if you look at the top of the right-hand column of percentages, you see the same 1.3% that we are showing you on page 5. That's the percentage change for that budget activity, change in our forecast from end of session to the February forecast. So it's a measure of how much movement there's been in our forecast since the end of session. And in this overview, I'm going to what we have assumed in these numbers, that if we explain that movement down to where what's not explained is less than 1%, then we're gonna call it explained. And if you want to get into details, we do for each forecast change, November and February, we prepare a detailed document which is an account of the forecast changes in November and another document in February. We have the November document on our website. I have a few of them here today. I also have a small supply of the February document, and they run 35 or so pages. They have not been handed out to all the members. We don't want to burden you with paper you don't want, but if you want the details, I have some copies here on the February forecast, and I can give those to any of the members who are interested. And that will have the whole story, probably in greater detail than you would ever want. But if you want the details, we have them documented in separate accounts of the November forecast changes and the February forecast changes. So I'm gonna go over and give you a thumbnail description of the changes in forecast since the end of session forecast, based on the notes on page 5 and the following page. The medical assistance long-term care... Oh.
No, go ahead. I'll wait.
Medical assistance long-term care facilities is the first MA budget activity. Our forecast has had a decrease of 1.3% for the current biennium, an increase of 0.2% in the next biennium. The decrease in the current biennium is that there has been a little bit of reduction in the nursing facility forecast and in the average cost that we forecast for nursing facilities. This activity is dominated by the money we spend on nursing facility care. So it makes sense that what change there is tends to have to do with nursing facilities. MA LTC waivers and home care. LTC waivers are special arrangements we make with the federal government to allow us to cover some a range of services we would not normally be able to cover under the medical assistance program. If those services help to keep people out of institutions, one of the main things affecting the change in this activity is that some of the payment activity for the elderly waiver, which is intended to keep people over 65 out of nursing homes, some of the payment activity has been going into managed care, and in our forecast it is moving out of this activity. So you see a decrease in this activity and an increase in MA elderly and disabled basic care. Now that's just a shift of the payments from one activity to another because elderly waiver is moving into managed care. This is a change that was authorized by the legislature several years ago. The rest of the movement in the long-term care waiver activity comes from an increase in the average cost of service for the CADI waiver. The CADI waiver is a waiver that keeps disabled people under age 65 out of nursing homes. The biggest waiver in this activity, the largest piece of expenditures in this activity, is the waiver for the developmentally disabled. We have not had any changes in that forecast that rise to the level that they would show up in this summary. There are some minor changes that would show up in the details. Elderly and disabled basic care. Part of this is the shift from elderly waiver. The rest nets out to less than 1%. There have been some minor changes in caseload forecasts, some minor changes in average cost forecasts, but they don't amount to a consequential change in the net. MA families with children basic, we had been forecasting until November for a number of years. We had been forecasting that when our new eligibility system came up for the medical program, that we would see a shift of a substantial number of Minnesota Care child and parent enrollees who would move over to the medical assistance program under the new system. For the November forecast, we made, and this in our forecast, the effect of this was to take some people out of Minnesota Care and to add them to the medical assistance forecast. In the November forecast, a decision was made that there was enough uncertainty about the implementation date of this new system that we would take that shift out of the forecast. So when we took that shift out of the forecast, we assumed that the population in Minnesota Care would stay in Minnesota Care and would not shift to medical assistance. So the not shift to medical assistance part of it is what shows up as a negative change in this summary. We assumed they would not go over to medical assistance, so it gave us a reduction in this part of the medical assistance forecast in the November forecast. And that's
does that have anything to do with the health match?
That is all about health match, Mr. Chairman. And as you may know, The department has announced today that it is terminating the contract with the vendor who was working for us on the Health Match system. And it is going to take a while for the department to sort out how it's going to get Health Match finished and how long that is going to take. As you may know, we had that shift in our forecast. We kept pushing it back because the expected timing of Health Match kept changing. And in the fall, we knew that we had negotiations going on with the contractor who was a successor company who had bought the contract, or had bought the contractor who was doing the work before. And the department reached the decision that it's not going to be able to work things out with the current contractor, and now has to figure out how it's going to get Health Match built. So that was the first part. That's the dropping the ship from Minnesota Care, which was done in the November forecast. What happens in the February forecast is we have a forecasted increase in the same caseload, which is driven by the weaker economic scenario. And if you look at those two changes, they are of a reasonably similar magnitude. We've increased the forecast in February in the next biennium almost as much as we had cut it because of dropping the Health Match shift.
Representative, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I understand this, the change in 10 and 11, is that's cumulative? So actually in the next 2 years it's going up at a similar rate as you're projecting it going up this year, so the 2.2 is built into the 5% in those two numbers?
Is that? Yes, okay. Because it's the dollar forecast. Yes, it's the change in the dollar forecast for the 10 and 11 biennium. We already.
I guess the question is: are we building? Is the 5% number building off a 2.2% higher base? So it's actually
it includes the 2.2%. If you think of the slope as being like this, this is the 5% increase, and this is the 2% increase, and
the slope is not changing that much.
And the slope is the difference in lines, old forecast and new forecast.
So
it's getting a little wider apart.
So it's accelerating a little bit, but not as much as looking at 2.2 to 5 may suggest. It's not doubling.
Correct.
Okay.
It's not a 0 to 5.
Yeah. Thank you. That was my question.
Yes.
That's helpful to know. And just, Mr. Chair, one more question. And just to kind of follow up on what Representative Walker was asking about, what you're projecting there is because we have a weakening economy, more people who we have already decided as a legislature should qualify for assistance, medical assistance, are applying for that assistance. That's the gist of what you're understanding there?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, that's correct. This is this is a new estimate of what we think the enrollment will be and our costs will be under the current law without any change in that law.
And it's due to the weakening economy.
It's due to the weakening economy.
Thank you.
Alternative care program is a non-entitlement program, so there is no change. We do forecast cancellation of part of the alternative care funding to the medical assistance program, What we do basically is we overfund alternative care by 10 to 15% because the money has to be distributed to the counties, and we know that a portion of it is always going to go unspent. And so we overfund alternative care according to how much we think needs, what we think is going to be spent in the program, plus 10 to 15%. And when we do that in the budget, we forecast that that overfunding is going to be left over and is going to cancel to the medical assistance program. And so we take that out of the medical assistance appropriation in the budget. Say we, if we appropriate $50 million for the alternative care program, we think we're going to spend 45, and we think we're going to have 5 left over. We appropriate 50 for Minnesota Care, but we take 5 out of the MA appropriation. And the purpose of that, this has been done for a long time, the purpose of that is to let there be enough alternative care money to be allocated to the counties to meet the estimated $45 million use of the program. If we estimated the use of the program at $45 million and we only allocated $45 million to the counties, they'd never be able to spend it all because it wouldn't be allocated to exactly the right county. And so we don't over-appropriate in the aggregate because we take it, we anticipate the cancellation and we take it out of the medical assistance appropriation. And this has gotten more complicated than I intended. But it's why the change in the alternative care forecast affects the medical assistance forecast and not alternative care. The staff person who works on this had to go through the routine a few times before it was fully mastered. All right, general assistance, medical care, top of page 6. We have a higher enrollment forecast here, also basically due to the weaker economy. The same economic variables that affect medical assistance enrollment that we use to forecast medical assistance enrollment of children and parents are also used in this program. So that's part of the increase. The other part of the increase is an increase in payment rates. We made a major change in the general assistance medical care program in the 05 legislature, and we set something in motion to shift a lot of general assistance medical care people over to the Minnesota Care program. It's become evident that more than we anticipated, those people that we have been sending over to Minnesota Care since this was implemented in the fall of 06, that these people are quite a bit healthier than the average in the GAMC program. And so one of the reasons why the rates in the GAMC program have had to go up is that we took a large piece of the population out of the program and sent it over to Minnesota Care, and they proved to be healthier than average, so the population left in the GAMC program is a sicker, more expensive population. And that is one of the major factors in the increase in rates. When we get to Minnesota Care, I will tell you that the rates in Minnesota Care for adults without children are lower than our end of session estimates. And that is in part the issue of the people moving over from the GNC program, who are healthier and cheaper than we thought. In part, it's an overall adjustment of the rates in the Minnesota Care Program. Okay, Chemical Dependency Fund, we did a big increase in the November forecast. It looks to us like we got it about right. We are not changing the February forecast. It was a substantial increase in the number of placements and higher costs of placements. This had started early in calendar year 07. It caused the program to run a little bit over forecast in fiscal year 07. And for the current biennium, we increased the forecast of expenditures by a total of 10%. That's about half enrollment and about half higher cost per placement. In the next biennium, it's up to 17%. So it's the same sort of issue we talked about before, that the 10 is sort of contained in the 17, and there's some additional increase in the next biennium.
Representative Walker.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hoffman, I was just curious. Did you say that this an increase in the amount of stay? And I wasn't familiar that there was a difference, and so I'm wondering if you had any more information on that. Are you talking about inpatient versus outpatient, or just...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, I only mentioned number of placements and average cost per placement. I didn't talk about length of stay.
Okay, then I misheard. Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hoffman, thank you for that clarification. Is that part of the more detail that you did offer before, that you get into the differences in the placements, too, in your handout that you're holding up there?
In this case, there is not much additional information in the detail. We tried to discover what was going on. We couldn't find a difference in diagnoses. We couldn't find much explanation except that we saw higher numbers of placements, especially in the tribal programs, and we saw higher rates, again, especially in the tribal programs. And that was a good part, but not all of the increase we were seeing. And otherwise, the department was not able to come up with a good explanation of why we were serving additional people in this program. More than we had expected, more than we had served historically. At the same time, if I look, the annual number of placements in this program has been running between 25 and 30,000 a year. So we see 2,000 to 3,000 placements on a monthly basis. Our new forecast has the number of placements going up by about 2,000 a year. Our old forecast did not have as much increase in the number of placements. So it's not a skyrocketing number of placements. It's just considerably more than we forecasted before. And each of the placements costs us an average of about $4,000 currently. So it's an expensive program, with a fairly small number of people using this, and we've had a consequential increase in that number of people.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, well, Representative Walker.
You know, I'm so fascinated today. It might have been those extra hours of sleep that I got that other members didn't get. But you know, I, Ms., Representative Anderson, I did not share your hours with you guys last night. You know, I think one of the other reasons why we have increased costs in health care is because of all the unhealthy individuals walking around this building and taking it back into the community and not taking the account. You know, members, I'll take a moment, actually. I was going to save it for Chair Thiessen's committee, that, you know, if you have not gone to the one-minute clinic, take the time and go. You know, members, staff, lobbyists, go home to your doctors, because you forget about those of us that do have chronic illnesses and your respiratory germs, how it can impact the rest of us. And so I'm no longer flu symptom-like, members, but my asthma. Thank you very much. I'm actually, Mr. Hoffman, really fascinated by this, because that you guys really couldn't put a finger on it. And I think it's something that we should look at some more. I mean, some of it, I would assume, in the last recent years, we've had more of an interest by a variety of members throughout the state, because whether it is the increase in meth or dealing with any other chemical dependency issue that our constituents and our communities are facing, and we put in more bills to look at it, we've tried to increase funding around it, access, you know, I mean, and things in areas that you would never even be able to pick up necessarily on, the increase in push by our court systems, whether it is with families in a hot-up home placement or corrections, and trying to push individuals into treatment when we can, and this increase. But I think it's just fascinating, and I'm thankful that you did make it, you know, clear that it's really just 2,000 or 3,000 extra individuals, because when I was just looking at the percentage, it just seems to jump. But when you just put it in the frame of just, you know, a couple thousand more individuals a year, it really puts it in perspective. And while we still have so many individuals who aren't able to access our programs, and how much more of an increase we really should be having in this state. And I don't know if you have information as it relates to, because you did the average, if that average cost determines the type of program, or are they all just, however I want to say, is it for certain types, are you seeing it for certain types of CD issues, or is it just inclusive for all treatment for CD for your average?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, the data that we normally look at is aggregate, and so we don't see it broken out into detail, but the CD division staff looked into what appeared to be going on and why we were serving more people, and I think the finding, other than some notable increases in the utilization of tribal programs, was that it appeared to be more enrollment of the same kind of people that we had served in the past.
Before I go on, I have an announcement. We have some ninth grade students sitting over here from Kirkhove and Murdoch. Over there, too, okay. And Sunbury High School. So let's welcome them here. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we discourage a whole other generation from ever contemplating public service, I think we should acknowledge that they happen to have dropped into one of our less fascinating to the layperson's hearings, and that there are other more exciting hearings that we get a chance to participate in as well. No offense, Mr. Hoffman, but if you were struggling to understand it all, and they don't have the material in front of them.
Mr. Hoffman.
I should have brought audio visual.
Representative Anderson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's already been answered. Thank you.
So the 10 and 17% on the CD fund is the increase in what we spend, what we anticipate to spend. But given that a large piece of the federal funding which is used to support this fund is fixed at a total of $9 million, that federal funding doesn't grow if we serve more people. And so the state cost of this increase of 10 and 17% is larger than that in percentage terms, and it's about 5 percentage points higher, because what is not paid by the federal block grant or the county share or the medical assistance program, all of which helps to support this activity, the net is paid by the state in the CD fund. And so the percentage increase to the state is higher than the percentage increase in payments.
Well, Mr. Hoffman, I just have to ask, if we have 2,000 more individuals in this program, do we have the beds to put them in? It relates to another matter from last week. You don't have to answer if you don't
I'll
want.
Take that as a rhetorical question. Okay, Minnesota Family Investment Program. We have a strange financing arrangement for this program. We have a federal block grant that helps to support this program. And the federal block grant imposes a maintenance of effort on the state. The state has to continue to spend in support of this program or in support of certain other allowable things as much as it's spent in a certain base year, which I think is 1994. So we have to continue spending in order to draw the federal money. Part of what we get to count as maintenance of effort spending is what we spend on child care assistance. And so if you look at the child care assistance line on this page, you'll see that the child care assistance forecast is down. In fact, it's even better to look back at page 1. And look at the decrease in the child care assistance forecast, $11 million. So that forecast is down $11 million. That is most of the reason why the MFIP forecast is up 14. Because if we don't spend it on child care, we have to spend general fund money on the MFIP program in a similar amount. And a further effect of that is if we have to spend more general fund money on MFIP, we can't spend as much federal money. So if you look down to the second row from the bottom, TANF grants, that is down by a total of $9 million. Now, those are not exactly the same figures, but the main part of what's going on there is that the child care forecast is down. We have less maintenance of effort. We have to spend more state general fund money on MFIP. And if we have to spend general fund money on MFIP, we can't use as much federal TANF money on MFIP. And that is the bulk of the movement in those forecasts. The MFIP caseload forecast is up somewhat, and that results in the spending of a little more federal money in the next biennium, So at the bottom of page 3, if you look at TANF funds under the February forecast change, the caseload MFIP, the MFIP caseload increase in the February forecast adds a little bit to the federal spending of TANF funds.
Mr. Hoffman, is there a relationship? You know, the increases in MA families with children is partially due to the economy. Why wouldn't there be? Is that because they're unemployed? Then they don't need child care? Or
the reason for the change in the child care forecast? I was going to come to that. The caseload part of the change in the child care forecast seems to be basically a matter of what's going on in the economy. The child care entitlement program, which we call MFIP and transition year child care, serves MFIP families and families exiting MFIP, and that's the transition year and the reason child care is paid for MFIP families is basically so that they can pursue employment. If there's less employment and training for them to pursue, they don't use as much child care. Even though our forecast of the MFIP caseload is up somewhat, we see them using child care at a lower rate, and so this child care forecast is down. And the transition year part of the forecast is also down because of the economy, because the way they get into transition year is to earn their way off of MFIP, and they have to have a job to be able to do that.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You asked one of my questions, and I thank you for that clarification, Mr. Hoffman. My other part to this, you know, because this is one of the sticky numbers that we will be wrestling with over the next couple weeks, and so more information that I have, the better now. And I do apologize that I haven't been able to do my homework over the last few days with this next question. Do you have any information coming into as it relates to the jobs? You know, we talk about where the economy is lagging, and especially in certain industries. And, you know, the goal for our MFIP program is to get individuals that are able and capable assistance while they need it, and then hopefully some level of whether it's a GED, getting their health stabilized, or hopefully getting some community service or technical training, as short as it is, that we offer them, and then get them into work. I mean, our goal is to get individuals into work, but with the lagging economy, these are usually the individuals that have the least amount of skills, that have usually, not always, lesser education, may have higher needs depending on either their own special needs or their children. And so I'm just curious, with the lagging economy, what type of jobs are available for these families? And, you know, regardless of what our economy is doing, we do still have a 5-year limit. And what are we going to be offering these families to be able to utilize child care if the economy is not going to pick up in the next year?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, your question goes to a level of detail that we don't look at. We look at global data, we look at statewide data, we follow state unemployment data, we use a national forecast to create a forecast of Minnesota unemployment to use to forecast our programs. I can tell you some things I've heard about why our economy seems to be doing a bit worse than the nation. And one of those things is that a lot of our manufacturing employment has to do with the building trade. And, you know, paint, windows, things like that. But I don't have an answer to your question about what kind of job. Obviously, it gets harder. When we get poor economic conditions, the competition gets tougher for jobs at all levels.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be a question for you or Representative Thiessen, perhaps. I'm looking at this number, and I'm wondering if the reason we have less need for child care is because of what we did in the last legislative session. And maybe you can refresh my memory, but my recollection is that we rolled back the requirement that you have to be working and in school and separated those. Maybe you could refresh my memory as to exactly what we did with the requirements to qualify for AMSUP last year. I remember there was some rolling back of what we'd done in previous years.
Staff maybe can talk more about Representative Walker. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pepin, and actually it was a rollback of 4 years. It's something that we previously did that we were doing incorrectly. It is partially that, and actually it still wouldn't take into account the increase of the number of individuals that are on welfare that Mr. Hoffman talked about. Those individuals, whether they were in work programs or going to school, would still be counted as an individual on the program. So the individual dollars or the individuals and the dollars that are accumulated because of the individuals wouldn't change. As it relates to the child care, you can only find a job if you can find a job. You know, if you can come to South Minneapolis, and no matter, you know, you can talk to my constituents that, you know, are on welfare, used to be on welfare, aren't on welfare, and the differences that have been made. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. It's just getting fun now.
Thanks for coming. But there should be somebody here from the department to clarify, but from my understanding from the information that I've received since last session, that would not count into take into account with that decrease in the child care that you're referring to. It's really about the opportunity to be able to locate a job, because even if you were in school, you would still need daycare services. You would still get the daycare services. You need daycare. You can't take your kids to class. Well, you shouldn't.
But, Mr. Chair, if I am really curious about that. If we could direct staff or someone to pull that language out, the policy language relating to what the requirements are, work and education requirements to qualify for MSET, I'd sure appreciate that.
We'll get you something on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hoffman, I'm wondering if we have any data on bounce back. You know, I think the counties and the employment agencies did a good job of getting people moving off of MSIP into employment, but a lot of times it was sort of those entry-level positions in retail and service industries that are kind of the first to lay off when you start to enter into a recession. And so I'm wondering if we're starting to see any of the kind of bounce back of people who we got off of MSIP or were in their transitional year, and now because of layoffs in the retail sector, the service sector are coming back on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, understand that our experience to date with MSIP is not an increasing caseload, but a caseload which had been going down for a number of years, which has leveled off, and which we anticipate, based on our forecast model, it is going to increase in the future. So we don't see MSIP caseload bumping up in actual data so far. We are forecasting that it's going to turn upwards. We could, if we can shape your question up to be able to look at the data, we can try to get someone to look at the data. But I just wanted to clarify that we don't see an MFIP caseload increase yet. We're anticipating it.
Representative Walker.
Just to follow up on that, Mr. Hoffman, that's interesting, and thank you, Representative Walker, for that clarification. Now, how does that work? And I'm assuming you're anticipating an increase because of the lagging economy. Get it?
Yes.
But how does that work with our time limit that we have around the program?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, the time limit does not have a very powerful effect on the program. Most of the use of MFIP is people, families in their early 1 to 2 years on the program. And most people using the program historically would not have gone very far towards the five-year limit. So from a forecasting perspective, the five-year limit is not of great importance.
Thank you, Dr.
Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm curious about that second piece of your connection between those three interrelated factors. I guess the decrease in general fund spending on child care means we have to spend more on TANF to meet our maintenance of effort, general fund maintenance of effort. And then how does that then relate to the reduction in TANF spending? What's that connection? If you could just explain that a little more.
There's only so much, well, what we can charge to TANF, the first thing we can charge to TANF is the program itself. And if we're forced to pay for more of the program with general fund, there is less we can charge to TANF.
And Mr. Chair, is there a way that we can adjust? I guess we have a maintenance of effort requirement we got to get to anyway. So the only way to effectively bring those TANF dollars back in is to increase how much we're spending on child care, in a sense?
It's to increase external maintenance of effort, whether child care, spending more on child care would be one possible way. Other allowable external maintenance of effort is also a possibility. And that gets into a complicated refinancing area that I don't claim to be expert in.
And so, basically, we would have to spend more general fund dollars on something, but it would also bring in more federal dollars than we currently are getting. So we kind of there would be a multiplier effect, in a sense.
Well, we'd have to spend more general fund dollars on something, or charge general fund dollars that we're already spending on something allowable.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Abler.
Yeah, I just thought I'd make both parties mad at me by asking that question. But you've taken care of one side pretty well. The Mr. Plante and Panis question. And the piece was kind of going there, but with the budget upon us, is there more places that TANF could be supplanted to get more access to general funds or use it for something else that we have not done? Is that one of the options we might need to consider later on?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I think you're asking, is the TANF fund balance bigger than it was before? And the answer is yes.
On
Representative Abler.
Yeah, and so that's probably part of it. But I know when Mr. Sligum in particular took it as a hobby, finding new and creative ways to supplant TANF, to free up general fund money to buy whatever we were buying at the time. That was very controversial. But if you're short $1 billion, you might have to look at some options. But is there more things to supplant than we have done? I know lately we didn't do any supplanting. We actually did not supplant last time, I think. And that's why I'm asked. That's why I couched the question like I did when I asked it. But is there that still remains an option if we have to? Is that maybe it's just a yes/no question? I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I'll repeat my statement. I'm not the expert on this issue.
Okay. Probably a good answer, thanks.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I thank Mr. Hoffman and Representative Abler, because we'll be having this discussion more. And I know you're not the expert, but, you know, I'm interested. I guess, Mr. Chair, I guess, you know, it would be nice to have someone that is outside of our body, I guess, and maybe we need to look at that, whether it's this year going into the next year from a federal level, to come do some clarification for us on really what legally we are supposed to be supplanting the dollars for, or what we get away with.
Mr. Hoffman, you can continue.
Okay.
But Representative Walker, were you looking for an out-of-body experience?
Mr. Chair, actually, no. I mean, you know, Mr. Chair, I'm actually looking forward to watching y'all next year, period. But, looking forward, I'll watch you a few times here and there. But, no, Mr. Chair, seriously, you know, it's one of the things that we go back, we sometimes think back to stuff, sometimes it's passion stuff, sometimes it's not fashion, it's rhetoric. You know, we go back and forth about this issue on a regular basis, and especially when we're having budget crises or we want to spend money other ways. But when we have special funds, whether it is our RAIN fund to our healthcare access fund, there are pots of money that are designated specifically for certain things. And then we can argue about if we want to change them and how do we change them, but we need to understand how they were really, what we're supposed to be spending them on for. And especially if we're talking about federal dollars, regardless of how we've utilized them in the past, and if we've been able to get away with it, is it really not just ethical, but are there any repercussions coming down the line, especially with the new president coming in, regardless of what party wins, that can come back to haunt us later on in years, saying that we have not been following federal guidelines? It's something serious that this legislature needs to look at, because we have already talked about $300 million, Mr. Chair. Before we start talking about more dollars, we need to know legally what if, you know, if we are doing transfers legally, how do we do that without having repercussions in the future?
Representative Gottwald.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I think to cut to the chase here, though, obviously we're facing a situation where this is going to cost us more than we expected, these programs. We're going to have less dollars to do it with. And I think any creative ideas that are within federal guidelines and within the rules need to be explored. We're all going to have to get creative.
Mr. Hoffman.
Back to child care, Mr. Chairman. On the bottom of page 6, the caseload forecast is down. We decreased it in the November forecast and again in February. It's down a total of 8-10%. We've also decreased the average cost of the program a little bit, and then we had a sum of federal money which was unspent in fiscal 07, which was carried over and spent in fiscal 08, and that's the bulk of the 8.4% in the current biennium, which is left unexplained there. The other part of that is the cost of child care being a little bit less. General assistance, page 7.
Mr. Hoffman, we got about 15 minutes left, and I was wondering if you could do the SANA fund for MFIP grant and then Minnesota Care.
I would be happy to, Mr. Chairman. Most of the rest of this on this page is fairly technical and not of great consequence as far as the program goes. General assistance caseload is up, and that's partly the economy. And then I can skip to the TANF stuff. This is basically the other side of the coin from the MFIP changes. We had to spend more general We anticipate spending more general fund money on MFIPs. We have to spend less on TANF. I looked at the numbers on the TANF changes, and it does not make a very large difference in the TANF balance, because in the current biennium it's a decrease of $9 million, and I'm looking toward the bottom of page one. It is more substantial because it's the sum at the bottom of page one. It's a decrease of 29 plus a decrease of 9. And so that's an increase in the TANF fund balance of $38 million. We spend $38 million less. And then if you look over to the next biennium, we have a decrease of 29 and an increase of 3. So there is in fact a substantial increase in the TANF fund balance. And it's the sum of the four numbers, three decreases and one increase. And just a little bit of that increase in the February forecast has to do with the higher caseload forecast for the MFIP program. Minnesota Care on page 7. Dropping the shift to Minnesota Care, I already talked about under medical assistance. This is the Minnesota Care side of that action. This is an increase and a fairly substantial increase in the next biennium. The next row is that we've seen a continuing trend of lower enrollment in the Minnesota Care program, and we have successively forecasted lower enrollment, recognizing where the base is going to. We made a little further adjustment of this kind in the February forecast. So in the current biennium, we are forecasting 10% lower cost because of lower enrollment. In the next biennium, we have a small increase, and that's because we are anticipating that a shorter application form adopted last month is going to reverse the enrollment trend in the Minnesota Care program and start to bring it back up. We can trace part of the enrollment decline in the Minnesota Care program to a longer application form adopted at the same time as we implemented increased verification requirements. We got a decrease out of the new 08 capitation rate. We did a rebasing of the Minnesota Care rate, something which is only done every 4 or 5 years. It was based more closely on actual Minnesota Care experience. It resulted, the new rate still resulted in a small increase in overall Minnesota Care payments. It resulted in an increase of about 3%, but we had anticipated an increase of about 7%. So the overall increase was less than we anticipated, and it adjusted all the rates in major ways, and the rates for the single adults especially went down. And the single adults are the people for whom the state pays the whole cost. The rates for the children went up quite a bit, and the rates for the parents came down some. So we had a net increase on the children and the parents. So we had the increase where the federal government pays about half of the cost, and we had a substantial decrease in rates where we pay the whole cost. And so we got a net savings out of the change in rates in 08.
Representative Abler.
Thanks. This is really interesting. Whatever has been said before. I should probably get a life, I guess. But on the dental part of that, on Minnesota Care and whatever other MA, Minnesota Care, since this is your topic, do you guys track an add-on for dental, or is it part of a package? And if you do, you know how much the plans spend? Do they spend more than what you give them, or less, or do you know?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, we don't break out the capitation payments that we pay to the health plans by service category. So we don't say this much is for dental. So we can't really track. We have some information. We know about dental encounters, but as far as the basic rate goes, we don't have a specific measure of how much the basic rate isn't broken out. However, starting in January 07, there is a dental add-on which is called Critical Access Dental. We make supplemental payments to the plans based on what they have spent on identified critical access dental providers, and we pay the plans the supplement which they are to pass through directly to the providers. And so we do have a measure of what the plans spend on dental, on the critical access dental providers, but not on all dental care.
Mr. Chair, just in brief, I know we're running short of time, because there's a proposal, I think, today, isn't there, to, with a dentist, they want to set up their own little one-payer, one-administrator thing. If there was a, there's a bill pending to set up a single dental administrator who would get whatever money you would allocate to dental, would that be really complicated to do, or is that a great idea, or do you have a thought about how hard that would be to implement?
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, it is possible to carve out services out of the capitation rate. What the cost effects would be would, of course, depend on how it was done and how much we paid.
Good answer.
Right. Go ahead, Mr. Hoffman.
How much time do I have left?
So much. 8 minutes.
8 minutes. Okay. Then I can do targeted ESI. This is about the verification of employer-sponsored health insurance. The legislature in 05 passed a mandate that we had to verify that people did not have employer-sponsored health insurance. This is a Minnesota Care issue. If a person has health coverage available for which the employer pays at least half, then we say they have employer-sponsored insurance available, and they are not eligible for the Minnesota Care program. This does not apply to children with family income under 150% of poverty, but it does apply to children at higher income levels and all the rest of enrollment in the Minnesota Care program. In the 07 session, we passed a repeal of the mandate to verify ESI, And we did a fiscal note that said it was going to have a pretty big caseload effect. And that was based on the observation that after we started this type of verification, that the caseload had gone down quite a bit. The department had a concern about program integrity and had done some federally mandated eligibility reviews that had found that in the period before the verification was in place, that we had quite a large number of eligibility errors concerning employer-sponsored insurance availability. And so the department decided to do less verification, but still to verify on a targeted basis for all new employed applicants and for anybody getting a job. And our assessment of that treatment of the policy is that it would cause us to see much less caseload increase than we had anticipated in our fiscal note, in which we anticipated going back to a policy that there was verification only if the Minnesota care worker thought there was a reason for verification. And so this is essentially this is writing off most of that anticipated caseload increase from the forecast.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Hoffman, I did get a letter about this, but basically what you're saying is the department is not implementing what the legislature passed.
Mr. Hoffman.
And you don't have to necessarily answer that if you don't want to take a position, but that's kind of the issue, and that's kind of the essence of it.
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, the department is not doing what we is not doing in response to the repeal of the mandate. What we assumed in our fiscal notes the department was going to do, and what we told the author at the time we were going to do. Okay, SCHIP funding. We got some additional SCHIP funding for federal fiscal year 08. We got $35 million of additional funding. This is funding that we will spend on the Minnesota Care parents who are in the SCHIP waiver. It saves the state about $8 million because we are able to use SCHIP funds at a 65% match instead of Medicaid funds at a 50% match. And that gets us down to less than 1%.
Representative Thiessen.
One more question, just on the SCHIP piece of this. Has there been any, based on what's going on federally, has there been adjustments in your forecast or projections?
What has been done at the federal level, except for this additional money, matches the assumption we were making in the forecast.
And a second.
Which is that the funding would stay at the 07 states allocation.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hoffman, are you able to provide us with numbers in regard to, for example, long-term care, medical assistance, those on waivers? And maybe, Mr. Chair, I'm just missing this, but maybe I do have the numbers, but is there a place to which we can go to find the numbers who are enrolled in those various programs?
Yes, I can I can give you something here. We put a spreadsheet, we put an extensive spreadsheet out on our website every time we do a forecast. But I can give you a paper copy of the same material.
Mr. Hoffman and Representative Erickson, we have a copy of that, so we'll reproduce it and give it to you, the members. Further questions? Well, thank you, Mr. Hoffman, and thank you, Ms. Snyder, for your wonderful job. The meeting's adjourned.